Fantastic. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for everyone who called in and all of you who took time out of the middle of your week to join us for February 2017's LHON Live Call. We're really excited for the speaker this evening and lots of a few new people on the call, and we hope you all enjoy the call as always. However, I encourage you, if tonight isn't your favorite call, continue to call back. It changes every month. We have lots of different speakers sharing, three different hosts that we rotate with, and they're always a good time, lots of a good chance to get to know the other people in the LHON community, answer your questions you may have, and just good fellowship all around. That being said, I'll give you a little history on the call. It was 2014 when I was at the LHON conference and met Maria and Jessica, the other two hosts. If you want to introduce yourselves or say hey real fast, ladies.
Hey, everyone.
Hey. I think we both do things.
Hey, Maria.
Hi. There you go. And so we all met and decided that that was a great opportunity to all chat, and then we decided we needed to chat more frequently. So we started doing these calls once a month, and it's been over 2 years since then, and we're still going very, very strong. That said, I am going to go ahead and mute everyone and give a little spiel here in the beginning, and then we will move to our guest speaker.
What you doing?
The conference has been muted.
So now you are all just listening, and I appreciate your patience. I did have a little background noise there, so we'll go ahead and keep it muted for the majority of the call as we introduce the speaker and have a little conversation. And then later on in the call, I will allow you all to unmute, ask questions of myself, the other host, our speaker, Mark, and generally just to have good conversation. Beyond that, at the very tail end of the call, I will even open up and stop the recording in case anyone has any burning questions that they don't want recorded in permanence. So feel free, if you have questions of that nature, you're welcome to stay on to the end of the call and have those questions answered as well. However, before we move into questions, I want to do a little housekeeping here at the beginning. A few rules and guidelines we kind of set up early on in these calls in terms of topics we like to cover and topics we try our best to avoid, because the nature is not best for this type of forum. So while we're here to fellowship and ask questions and learn tools and tricks and hear stories of other people going through similar things like we did, we do try to avoid a few hot topics, principally medical advice, legal advice, employment advice, all of those types of things we've just learned over the years are better for professionals. If you have those types of questions, we're happy to kind of put you in touch with people who may be best to answer those questions. However, we will do our best to avoid giving that kind of advice here or sharing that type of experiences here as best we can. However, we're really excited for all the people on the call this evening, and we look forward to meeting you all a little better at the end of the call. However, with that, I will go ahead and open us up to our guest speaker. Mark, if you could press our 7 and we'll get you unmuted. And we can start our introduction there. Our guest speaker this evening comes to us from Canada, the fantastic country of Canada that I know and love very, very well, especially due to all of the LHON connections I've made with this community. He has a fantastic story to share with everyone here that started about a decade ago. Mark, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you now.
A decade ago, and then it kind of paused out there.
No worries. I was just waiting for you to get you unmuted. I'm sorry I didn't give you the background about unmuting, but we're happy to have you. And if you could go ahead and say hey to everybody and kind of tell us how you were introduced to the community.
Absolutely. So I just want to say hello to everyone, and I am calling in from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and I'm 29 years old, and I was affected in 2004 when I was 17, and I learned about the LHON community when I was first reached out to by Lissa, and obviously very grateful for it. I wish that I could say that I've been actively involved in it for the past 12 years or 10 years or since it's been going so strong and doing an amazing job impacting folks' lives. But I think it's been very new since I've kind of come to terms myself with wanting to take it upon myself to get more involved in the community and actually start learning about others as well who also have LHON. And so it's been, you know, the past several months learning more about the community has been a great experience. And with that, it's been one that I'm sure has brought me a lot more eagerness now to keep being involved and to keep being engaged and to not just share my story, but to have my ears open to listen to everyone else's story as well.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. Well, while you said you weren't totally leaned into this community for a little while, I know for a fact you have been, at least for a long, long time, very invested in the blind community and helping others. How did you first get into that, and what have you done in that vein?
Well, I think there's, I think when I look back when I was 17 and I was first affected, there was, I think there was so many moving parts to the story at the beginning when first affected and lots of obviously confusion and, lots of frustration, disappointment, you know, all these, unfortunate negative things. And I think the way that I had, dealt with it at the time was by simply not dealing with it and keeping myself as busy as possible. Through that, I think the first time I got really introduced to the blind community in Canada and others who are also blind and partially sighted was the first time I went out to a blind hockey practice with the Toronto Ice Owls blind hockey team. And I think that was the first time, and for those of you who have not heard about blind hockey, I'm sure we're going to get into all about the sport, but I would say that was the first time when I met others, you know, walking into the locker room, when I met others who also had, you know, vision problems or were also blind, individuals who had, were using their canes, guide dogs, had guides, and I think that was really when I started learning more about the community and in some ways started learning about myself.
Yeah, so take us back a little bit. Did you do that research to find blind hockey at first on yourself, by yourself, or who pointed you towards that?
It's a great question. It's actually kind of a funny story, but when I was a kid in my local community, the Toronto Ice Owls had been around for about 40 years. They had come to my minor hockey league, so my local community where I grew up, and they played a charity fundraiser game. And after I was diagnosed in 2004 at 17, I was playing very competitive hockey. Obviously, a dream was to play professionally. I was a couple of years away from what was hopefully going to be a scholarship and be drafted. And I started getting released from the teams, released meaning that I was let go because of the situation, which was pretty tough because I had spent, you know, 13 years focused on you know, being the best I could be and getting to that level. And I felt for when that was all happening, my hands were really tied and I didn't know what to do or where to go. And it was my dad who actually, when I was sitting down, you know, one day, and I was pretty much in tears because I just, I felt like my hands were really tied. And it was my dad, and he said, you know what, I don't know if you remember, but there was a blind hockey team that that visited the community when you were young. Do you remember when you were a kid, Mark? And I thought about it. I was like, yeah, I do remember that. I mean, I wonder if they're still around. I had asked my dad and did a little bit of research. And I think one of the best decisions I look back to in my own life, and I'm sure we'll get into more and more, was picking up the phone to make that call. Because I think it was picking up the phone to make the call to inquire about the team was not just picking up the phone to make a call to someone to inquire about a program. It was picking up the phone to inquire about me being optimistic about trying something new in my life, even despite what had just happened to me. So for me, it was a very big phone call. And I remember like it was yesterday. I remember the exact room in the house I was. I still live in the same childhood house too. And that was really how the story happened, of how I found out about the program. And then and actually starting that first day in the locker room, learning about blind hockey, I think a new passion was definitely found.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a combination of serendipity of that hockey team coming to you when you were a kid and you still had all of your vision, combination of that and you being willing and accepting trying something new, which is, I think, the first step towards kind of new normals and all those kinds of things, which obviously is really, really important for a lot of us. And I think everyone's new normal should be a combination of things they used to love and things that they find that they love with their vision the way it is after OHON. So you said you've been playing hockey a long time. When did you start playing hockey, Mark?
I started skating when I was 3 years old, and I started playing hockey when I was 4 in an organized community. And so my brother's 2 years older than me, so at the time he was 6. And it was actually funny because I first started playing with kids that were 6 to 8 years old, and it was a way for my parents to keep my brother and I on the same team to have to make one trip to the hockey arena instead of two. And I think for a lot of my life, I always played against older players, and I think that's what really helped me. Really helped motivate me to get better and be stronger, and again, helped me from a maturity side as well. And I think all those lessons that hockey taught me, you know, such as determination, hard work, and not just hockey, but sport, really, and passion, it taught me all these things that, you know, later in my life, after being diagnosed, I learned to apply these things in my life as someone now affected by vision loss. And little do you know sometimes that what happens to you, you know, growing up and the life lessons that you're taught, they become valuable. They may not seem valuable when they're going through them at the time. You know, something such as simple as hanging in there and keeping your head held high, that little life advice can go a long way when your head's hanging low and you feel so negative about your life and the state of it, right? So, you know, I think that I've been very fortunate that I was able to participate in sport in my community, and as a result, it's helped me definitely shape a lot of my life.
Yeah, so talk to me a little about you lose your vision at 17. You're sitting there wondering what's next, and your dad comes in the room, tells you, reminds you of this blind hockey team, and you make the call. Then what?
So we pay a visit to the arena on a Sunday morning, and I just, before I go on, I just want anyone listening to, I mean, there might be hockey fans on the call, there might not be, and I think the one thing to, when listening to the story, is to really understand that, for me, it hockey was my passion. For you, it could be a completely different passion or hobby or interest. So keep in mind that when thinking about the story, it's really important to remember that this could be your passion or your interest or your hobby or your form of exercise or whatever it may be. In Canada, as you know, hockey being our national winter sport, the arenas are cold, and that's really how we like it. We don't want it any other way. I remember the Sunday I visited the team, and my reaction when I had entered the dressing room, as I was talking about earlier, where all the players were blind and visually impaired, and they were, you know, they had their guide dogs and using their canes. And in many ways, I felt like I was entering any other ordinary hockey team's dressing room. There was still the same smell and trash talk, and there was still the same love and passion for the game. And I took my seat down in the dressing room, and like every new player to any new team, was obviously very quiet and a little bit timid. And I was a new player, not just to blind hockey, but in many ways to the blind community. I'm not sure if anyone listening has been in that experience before, where you enter something new and you're the first person to enter it new. It could even be something as simple as being on this call for the first time. And I think, what I was sharing with Andy, what it did for me was it took me on a new journey in life, because I started learning about the sport of blind hockey in Canada and its roots and its history. And it taught me about so much about a way to play the game I never knew. and in many ways motivated me to take it upon it myself to take action to try and help the game. I think what had happened was a lot of the players at the time were a lot older on the team. They were in their, you know, their 60s and 70s, and there was not much youth, I guess you could say. And that the moment where I think everything changed for me, where I realized that I wanted to commit my life moving forward to devoting every day to helping blind hockey, was the time when I leaned over to one of the players in the locker room next to me, and I kind of quietly asked the individual if children across Canada, boys and girls, if they have the opportunity to play the game in their own community. And the answer really fast was no. There were no programs, and I'm sure, Andy, you could imagine, folks listening can imagine how I felt having that opportunity as a child when I was sighted to get that chance to play the game. And the truth is, it really hurt. I think for the first time in my life, at 17, 18 years old, I actually felt like I wanted to do something about it. A lot of times when you're in your teenage years, a lot of times you hear things and you can disagree with them, but a lot of times you let them go right past you. Where in this case, there was something I felt like I needed to do because I didn't think it was fair. And I left the locker room that day with being someone on a mission and someone determined and devoted to want to make a difference for kids who are blind and to play the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a really important point. I mean, and even back to what you said earlier, I mean, this passion could be hockey. This passion could be another sport. Even beyond that, this passion for you happened to be hockey. It happened to be a sport. For others, it's very different things. And I think it's really important to echo and remind everyone here. I mean, your passion may be writing or reading or these different kinds of things that I think I hear different blind stories all across the community all the time. And some of them are athletically inclined, but some of them are things way outside of that. And I'm as inspired by those stories and people who are doing other things as all of these. And I really encourage everyone, just whatever it is you enjoy doing before or whatever it is you enjoy doing, period, do it, lean into it. And obviously, Mark, you're a fantastic example of someone who did that. And more importantly than playing hockey, you leaned into it and you found a way to help others.
Yeah, I think the reality was, though, was not easy. And I don't want anyone here to think that it was a walk in the park. It was not easy going to the arena and not being able to, receive passes on the ice from the puck because my vision was going, or being able to see who it was sitting next to me because I couldn't see them clearly. I would have to only make them out based on certain landmark colors on their equipment or obviously their voice, because I didn't really know many of their voices yet. So it was tough. And the point was that I was still in great shape, and this whole part of me was supposed to be playing very competitive hockey with sighted people, and I was playing blind hockey with a big puck that makes noise. And it was tough to swallow and it was tough to accept. I think the mentality that I had at the time is very similar to the mentality I still have, and it's simply just to go with it and to give it a shot and to give it a try and to see where it takes you. Having that mentality at the time and still having it has brought me to a lot of really cool places and have had really cool experiences, because I just simply said, I'm just going to go with this. I didn't know why it happened to me, because LH1 just, I mean, you don't expect it to happen. And that's tough, because anything that's unexpected and that's a challenge like that is very difficult to deal with. It's devastating. It's tragic. And I felt at the time that the best way I could deal with it simply was by just going with it and seeing where it takes me. Keeping myself really busy. And I think that's why I took on such a big task at a young age to build out a blind hockey community in Canada. Was because I knew it would keep me busy, and I knew that the more I was helping others, at the time and focused on helping people who were passionate about the same thing I was passionate about would ultimately help me get through this this obstacle.
Yeah, no, you certainly took on a huge task in your teenage years, deciding that you wanted to spread blind hockey to the youth and children across what is a pretty big country that you eventually saw a lot of. How did you go about raising that money?
So I when I was in university, I had received a phone call. I guess one of the local papers had written an article featuring the story, and I received a phone call from an individual. And this just goes to show everyone listening how the LHON community, how someone simply reaching out to lend a helping hand and to be a voice and a set of ears can go a long way. I had received a phone call from an individual named Chris. I won't share his full name, but his name's Chris, and he was a bodybuilder at the time. I was 20 years old, and he was a bodybuilder. He was an avid fitness instructor, and he was in his mid-30s, and he was also diagnosed with LHON when he was in his 20s. And he had reached out because he had never, and he was just lived about an hour and a half away from Toronto. And him and his wife drove all the way to my university residence where I was living. And long story short, it was the first time I had ever met someone else with LHON. And I give a lot of my credit and thanks to this to Chris because, I mean, he helped me really realize and motivate me to achieve these goals of what I was trying to set out to do here to raise money and awareness for blind hockey in Canada. The story he had told me was very similar to himself, that he was an aspiring professional football player and he had lost his vision to LHON suddenly. And the way he decided to, after a tough time, coping with it, how he decided to get himself off the ground and back up again, he took on a cross-Canada nationwide tandem cycling tour where he went from coast to coast, roughly about 8,000 kilometers on a two-seater tandem bike to raise funds for, I believe at the time it was, I think it was Foundation Fighting Blindness. It was an eye research foundation. And I was so inspired by his story and the fact that I had met, and because I was at a point in my life where I was not even sure about, if I would ever find someone or be able to have a girlfriend or get married or if I would ever be able to achieve these goals. There was so much doubt that I was battling with because the task I was taking on was so large, yet the obstacle I was facing was also so large. So it almost felt like I was taking on two major large obstacles at the same time. And I remember when he left that night, I couldn't sleep the whole night and I was up all night and I was thinking about the conversation and how my life had really changed. And, I was in university at the time and I was struggling going to school class because, at the time in 2005, 2006, there was the adaptive technology out there was very little. It was there. The first iPhone had come out in my first year of university. And, I mean, unless you had a lot of money, there's no way you were affording that. I was in a very tough time where I had to try and figure out how to use technology. And it got so frustrating to the point that I think I sometimes look at that phone call that Chris gave as a bit of a miracle call because it put me on a new journey in life to take on this dream that I had set out to do. And I woke up a few mornings later. I don't mean like I actually slept a few days, although I did have some days. I slept a lot of days. But I woke up a few days later, and there was a pair of rollerblades sitting next to my bed in my room. And I looked at the rollerblades, and I put them on to see if they would still fit. And I thought to myself, you know what? I had gained quite a lot of weight at the time, and I wasn't the healthiest. And I thought, well, you know what? Maybe I can go for a skate. And see if I still got it, see if I could still rollerblade like I could when I had eyesight. And I remember going for a rollerblade in the community, and it was, I mean, still to this day, I try and go out in the community, and it's never the most it's pretty dangerous, I've learned. So that's why now I do it with a guide or with someone with me, having very low vision. And at the time, I was rollerblading, and I remember I took a seat at a park bench, and I was sitting there, and I was thinking, I was just like, you know, what if I could do this across Canada? And what if I could go across Canada to raise money and awareness? And if that could, if it could help people's lives who are also blind and partially sighted to play hockey, the game that we love, I think that the journey could be an opportunity to do that, raise funds and awareness, but it all could be a journey for me to learn about myself and to see a part of the country, see the country on skates that I would have never thought I would ever. And so in 2009, when I was 22, I rollerbladed 5,000 kilometers from Toronto to Vancouver, which took 111 days, four pairs of rollerblades and 120 wheels. And 2 years later, in 2011, at age 24, I skated an additional 2,000 kilometers from Halifax to Toronto. Now, there's some conversions here to do. I know Andy, you and I were talking about some conversions from miles to kilometers, because in Canada we do everything in kilometers, and in the U.S. it's done in miles. And
I think we decided, I mean, knowing a 5K is roughly 3.1 miles, it would have been about 3,100 miles.
Correct. Exactly. And a second would have been about 800 to 900 miles, I believe. And the and I want to know that I didn't, this obviously wasn't something I did on my own. I was able to rally together a community. I was able to rally together my family, my friends, my nucleus of support. This is the same people that supported me through the tough times being affected by vision loss were the same people that were right behind me when I was taking on this big endeavor. And that's really important to know. I mean, my family, you know, stuck by me the whole way, and my friends, I have the same, you know, friends I've had since kindergarten who have stuck by me the whole way. I've been very fortunate. And the same community around me has always been there for me too. And I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. Again, I was simply just going with it and the whole theme behind that. And next thing I knew, the blind hockey community was just growing on its own. We found out that there were other hockey teams, blind hockey teams who were playing that no one knew of as well. Teams in Montreal and Vancouver and Calgary and Edmonton. And that apparently we learned by going on this rollerblade, people started talking about the sport too. And while that was happening, the community started connecting with one another. And this was all happening while I was skating and while we were skating as a team. And in that process, we were able to meet with families who were also affected by, blindness in different ways, and young children who are blind, and boys and girls who are blind and visually impaired who always wanted to play hockey, but for many ways were always told they could not because of their eyesight. And some of the most inspiring times I had were skating after a long day, 50 to 60, 70, 80 kilometers a day, and being able to meet with a family who has a young boy or girl who were blind and always wanted to play the game, and being able to have dinner with that family and share my story, and most importantly, listen to their story. And I think that, the feelings crossing the finish line in both skates were great feelings, but I think the some of the better feelings were finding myself on those journeys. And really, when I mean finding myself, I mean I'm not simply saying that every day I was skating, I was accepting, LHON. But what I was doing was I was accepting that LHON will be a journey for me through my lifetime to accept. And what skating did each every stride was it gave me more and more confidence to take on this big life challenge of accepting LHON, because I was able to take it upon myself to achieve a goal I set out to do. And that's why I shared at the beginning of the call the importance that it doesn't for me with hockey, but for anyone. Prior to being affected by vision loss, it's so important to keep your passions in your life, and it's so important to whatever it may be, hobby or interest. And there's no discrimination on what that hobby or interest is. As long as it's your passion, it's so important that you continue to do that and you keep that close to you in your life. I would not be the person I am today or where I'm at today if I didn't keep my passion of hockey close to me. And I think as a result of that, For the next 5 years, Andy, at United Scouts, they were very busy years growing programs for children and adults across the country.
Yeah, no. So I have one question. How long did the trips take you?
The first rollerblade from Toronto to Vancouver took 111 days, so 3.5 months. And the second rollerblade from Halifax to Toronto, so from the East Coast to Toronto, took 64 days. And they were tough. I mean, they were tough days. Rollerblading at the side of a highway, being often in the middle of nowhere, you had to find ways to keep yourself sane in many ways and motivated. When you're doing the same thing every single day, you wake up in the morning, you put on your skates, and you're skating nonstop. You have lunch, and you're continuing to skate and skate. No matter how much you love skating and hockey, it's a lot of skating. And what kept me really going, again, was the cause of what it is that we had set out to do, music, inspiring music. And that really motivated me. And phone calls to close on family, friends, loved ones, people kept me going. I think this was a lot about what was so important for me to do was not to have a solution to what would keep me going, because some days there, I felt there was nothing that could keep me going to skate another 5 or 6 kilometers. I was exhausted. I was tired. I had blisters. I just couldn't do it. And I would have to find ways to motivate myself. And the way I often would do that was I would go back in time to times when I played hockey and as a child or as a teenager, and I would think about a tough game that I had, and I would think about how I got through that game. And I would use hockey, as I shared earlier, and my experiences in life of growing up to teach me how to get through those tough times. That's why I was sharing how it's so important that those values we learn when we're young, you end up using them again later in your life. And that was so important for me, to be able to find ways to get through those hurdles, because some of them were tough. Some of them I don't know how I got out of, to be honest. I still think about it here and there and think about how I was able to do it. But I'm just one person, and there's nothing different or special about me than anyone else in the call or anyone else out there who has LHON. It was just my way of keeping myself motivated and keeping myself busy and taking action. There's so many ways we can do this in our community, no matter where you live geographically, whether you're in the South in the U.S. or you're in the North in Canada, or wherever you're around the world. I mean, everyone has passions despite where they are globally, and there's so many things we can do in our own community to keep those passions going and to help people.
Yeah, exactly. No, I certainly want everyone to hear that, and I appreciate you sharing. I want to give others a chance to ask questions as well. However, I have one last question before I allow others to open up as well. And that is simply, you mentioned a lot on your trip, your family helping you, friends helping you, but you also met strangers along the way. What were the logistics around getting your story out there, meeting people and those types of things? I mean, is that something that Chris helped you with after having done something similar, or?
You know what, that's a good question. How I kind of explain it to people is it was almost as if you were running for politics in some ways. From a campaign perspective, every town you hit, you had to elevate, your profile of who you were and what you were trying to do in those towns. So the team of family and friends that came with me, we ensured to delegate tasks to everyone to reach out to these communities. For some individuals, it was setting up accommodations. For some, it was reaching out to local papers and to radio stations. For some, it was going out raising money through donation buckets. There were so many tasks, and that was the big thing for myself. Is not only was I skating, but I was also in a place to lead this team, because it was important that we, aside from me, crossing the finish line, we had to reach our goal of actually raising money here and awareness, because we had a cause that we had to impact. So I think it was I was so fortunate that everyone who was with me was just as motivated as I was. And I think because I was motivated as well, I think is what it can really be contagious to everyone else around you, especially when people are on your side.
No, that's fantastic. So knowing that we probably have some people with TVs in the background and children in the background, all those types of things. I am going to allow folks to individually unmute themselves to ask questions before I open the call up to everyone and require you to, again, mute yourselves. So if at this point in time, if anyone has a question and they'd like to unmute themselves individually, you can press *7 from your phone. If you do have trouble seeing your phone and pressing those buttons, in just a moment, I will unmute everyone, and I'll make sure everyone gets their questions answered. However, I wanted to try this first. I'll give everyone just a minute for anyone who does successfully unmute and has any questions for anyone. It could
Hello?
Be from – hey.
Oh, sorry. Did I interrupt you?
Nope, not at all.
Okay. This is Blake from San Diego. I've grown up playing hockey, and it's been a huge passion of mine. And I was affected last year, and I played hockey. And currently, last year I played on my school roller hockey's varsity team. And this year I'm playing JV. And I'm still just trying to make it work with everything. And it's hard and frustrating and different, but it's just sweet to be able to still be out there, even though I may not be the best. And I've looked into blind hockey, and I've talked to Brody about it.
Matt Morrow also.
Mm-hmm. And I got a blind hockey puck, and I've heard about, like, tournaments that are going on in San Jose and in Toronto, but I just really want to, like, find out more about it. And it was really cool to hear your story, and because I always wonder so much about it, and just hearing a similar situation is really cool. And will you be in at the San Jose tournament?
Sorry, Blake, I just got a little emotional listening to you. I'm not sure if I'll be in San Jose, but what I can tell you is two things. One, I am blown away by your ability to keep playing the game you love, even despite what's happened, because it's not easy. And I think that you should keep doing it and keep doing what it is that you set out to do here. Two, everybody you're in communication with right now are the best people to be in communication with. You know, keeping in touch with someone like Brody, obviously, and Brody's done a lot for me in my own life, too. And Matt Morrow is the number one guy for blind hockey in the world. So I would say he's the guy you want to keep talking to as well. Try your best to make it to San Jose, because I can assure you it will be a life-changing event. And lastly, there also is a national tournament, a blind hockey tournament in Toronto. Just to leave it, don't be a stranger and connect with me on Facebook, or we'll make sure you get my contact information as well, Blake, and you and I can keep the conversation going too.
Sweet, yeah, I have a ton of questions, and I won't take up the time here, but I just have one important question. Are you a Maple Leafs fan?
Is this call still being recorded, or...?
Yes, the call is still being recorded. This will go down.
I am a diehard Maple Leafs fan, yeah.
Okay, we can
I'm a diehard Maple Leafs fan, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love hockey. I don't care who's on TV. I'll watch it. It doesn't matter who's playing. But I am born and raised a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. So, good, great question. I wasn't expecting that one.
Okay. I will love to talk to you more in the future.
Of course. We can chat anytime you want.
But Blake is an absolute rock star. He mountain bikes and does everything under the sun.
That is amazing.
Super impressive guy.
Reminds me a little bit of me, to be honest, just when he was sharing his story there and when he first was affected. So that's super cool.
Anyone else have any questions? I'll remind you, it's *7 to unmute yourself, and then in a moment I will unmute everyone and ask you all to, again, mute yourself.
This is Lisa from Canada. I was going to stay muted, but as soon as Mark said it, he's a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, I'm not going to hold it against you, but Ottawa Senators rule. Anyways, I've talked to Mark quite a bit, And Mark, just hearing your story again, even though I've heard it, you've told me it, it brings tears to my eyes because I have a son that's 16 and is not affected, and I hope never, avid hockey player. And just to know that there are those resources still out there for them to continue their passion is exceptional. So I commend you on everything that you've created and you continue to do. You know, for the younger ones that are listening, they can still follow their dreams and their passions and do what they want to do. And I think that's amazing, Mark, what you've done.
Well, I'm not the only one, Lisa, that's for sure. I mean, you've no matter the situation for your son has an amazing mother, and that's going to help help him no matter what happens.
Well,
so,
thank you.
Your strength is contagious to others in need of it. That's for sure.
Thank you. It's not about me, but thank you.
Can I just note how Canadian it is that we all just watched you both compliment each other for a few minutes?
Well, that's what us Canadians do, right?
That is what you Canadians do.
You know what? I'd like to say I think people from the United States do this as well. Sometimes people think it's just Canadians who are really nice. Some of the nicest people I know are American, to be honest, and I think it's an unfortunate thing that people think just Canadians are nice, because I know a lot of Americans who are equally as nice.
Hey, Mark, this is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. One thing I wanted to, well, first of all, thank you. I loved hearing you tell your story. It's amazing and wonderful. And one of the things I kind of wanted to say out loud for the group to hear is, as Mark's telling his story, the Chris that he refers to is somebody who was in the old Yahoo group before we had a Facebook group. So when Jeremy was affected in 2008 and I was trying to find people to kind of get me out of the darkness and get us out of the darkness, I stumbled upon Chris, and he was awesome and gave me a lot of good guidance and advice, but he also told me about this guy that he had gotten to know who was doing this thing called rollerblading from Toronto out to Vancouver, which I thought was amazing and crazy and awesome. And he put me in touch with Mark. And, I mean, again, you're telling the story of what you remembered vividly. I remember vividly, you know, being in this moment where my son was sort of in the darkness and didn't know how he was going to get out, and I didn't know how to help him get out. And through the opportunity of chatting with Chris, who got me in touch with Mark, who was, you know, in the trust, and I'm envisioning, you know, doing what he's doing, and he talked with me for the longest time and, you know, assured me that it was going to work out okay, and sort of said a lot of the same stuff. Jeremy's passion, golf, but, you know, it was the same thing of you can do something, and Jeremy started doing his bike ride instead of rollerblading. But a lot of the things that got Jeremy sort of out of the darkness and moving forward actually came from having the, you know, somebody connect me with, you know, Mark, who was on at a different place. He was like 4 or 5 years further in his journey, and that inspired me, which helped inspire Jeremy, which moved us forward. And I know a lot of folks on the call that, you know, I talk to over time, and everyone says, well, thank you, and I always turn it around and say, don't thank me, just someday I'm going to come back to you and ask you to pay it forward. And to me, this is a perfect example of, you know, Mark's one of those people that did so much for me and for Jeremy when we were in the darkness. And, you know, I've tried to pay it forward by, you know, helping other folks. But that's, to me, that's one of the exciting things about this community is, you know, finding him when he was doing what he was doing inspired us, and then hopefully, you know, Jeremy inspires others, and then other people inspire others, and everyone just keeps paying it forward. And so just wanted to say that. Thanks again, Mark, for helping us get out of the darkness. It meant a lot.
You're very welcome, Lisa, and there's no question you have paid it forward with the community. I mean, your leadership has changed lives, and it continues to change lives, and because of it, building a community is one of the most amazing feelings ever. And just being able to see individuals interact with one another who share this common situation in their life, it's the most rewarding, fulfilling feeling. And that's thanks to your leadership and for you being able to rally a team of some great leaders as you have, individuals in Canada who I've been having the opportunity to speak with as well as in the U.S. I've been able, fortunate to speak with Maria and Andy and Jessica and so forth, right? So it's amazing. Everyone's leadership and motivation is going to carry the LHRM community forward and forward. It's just so important that we continue to be engaged, and that goes for myself as well, to continue to be engaged and continue to be optimistic about the differences we can make in everyone's life, whether affected or related family, your friends, or loved ones.
Anyone else out there able to unmute and ask questions? I'll give it another minute. But I know we're about to have a bunch of background noise, so I want to take advantage of this opportunity while we have it.
I'm just thinking of what's going to happen when it gets unmuted, the types of questions I may get here.
Yeah, you better have this, Mark. With that, I will go ahead and unmute. However, before I do it, now that you can all hear me clearly, if you are in a loud place, once we unmute, I will ask you to either press your mute button on your phone, if you have that capability, or press *6, and that will mute your line after it's unmuted. So even if you're muted now, when I unmute the call, everyone will become unmuted, and you'll again have to press *6. So I will go ahead and do that now for everyone.
The conference has been unmuted.
Wow. Okay. Everyone prepared very wonderfully. I'm really impressed.
Everybody left.
Yeah, everyone left. Exactly.
Oh, there it is. There it
was
is.
Was it the Toronto Maple Leafs comment? Or?
Yeah, I think it was.
It may have been. I don't know.
What is Chris's last name?
I don't feel too comfortable sharing his last name.
That's fine.
However, shoot me a message and I'll send you some articles about him. Maybe I'll feel a bit more comfortable doing that. If someone else knows it, they can share. I just don't feel so comfortable. But again, I think you'll be able to find it out pretty quick through a Google search.
Hi, Mark. This is Ida in Ottawa.
Hi, Ida. How are you?
On the phone, but I've just been listening to your story, and you are truly inspiring. You actually have me kind of in tears, but at the same time in awe at your determination, and you have me feeling like, yes, we can conquer after hearing your story. So thank you for that. Thank you for sharing. I also wanted to ask you, what is the name of your foundation? It seems to me you set up a foundation.
So the charity that I had originally started was called Courage Canada. But it's now the charity has been transitioned. So it is now not called Courage Canada. It's called the Canadian Blind Hockey Association.
Oh, okay.
So as we build out the Canadian Blind Hockey Association in Canada, in the United States, with support of USA Hockey, is also building out a USA Blind Hockey Association as well. So that's why it was important to transition the charity to this association. I'm no longer a part of the organization. I sadly exited when the transition happened to take on my next chapter in life of what it is that I want to set out to do. But it's no longer called Courage Canada. The main website for blind ice hockey in Canada is blindicehockey.com.
Okay. So to Google that for those who are interested.
Exactly.
Okay. That's great. Well, I'm very interested in finding out what your next ambition will be. And I simply just
go with it. That's as I did from the beginning as I was sharing. I go with it and simply going with it and giving LHON a try has brought me to some pretty cool places and cool experiences. And then by that, having that same mentality, my hope is it will continue to do that. You never know.
Yeah, I think you'll be fantastic at whatever you do.
Thank you very much.
What is your next challenge?
What is my next challenge? I have different types of challenges. I have a challenge personally to I have a health challenge in my life. And I say that I have a personal challenge to be the healthiest I can be physically and mentally. And I think what I've learned is before I figure out a work challenge, it's so important for me to be at the best of my game and the top of my game the way I feel physically and mentally, from my physical shape to my mental health. That is my first challenge. From a work challenge, my goal is to build a professional speaking company to continue sharing my story and working in the hockey world, motivating hockey players to get through adversity. And I think alongside working with other Canadians in Canada, working as a unified team, it would be great to try and build the LH1 Canada community as well. But that's going to happen with teamwork and being able to rally together Canadians and be able to do just that. So I think there's a few different challenges, but I've learned the importance is really focusing on my health, because when you're healthy and you're physically fit and your mental health is strong and you're motivated and you have the right attitude, you can take on anything.
Well said.
I'm sorry, who did that question come from?
This is Howard in Massachusetts.
Thanks, Howard.
Thanks, Howard.
Yes.
Mark, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Yeah, cool. This is Adam from just north of Seattle. I've been affected for basically a year and like 2 days. I still feel that it's weird. What kind of coping mechanisms do you feel like make you just feel like a normal person?
I think what part of it for me was having to redefine what normal is. I think sometimes when we're looking at normal, we're thinking about sometimes the way life used to be. The best advice I think I can give is to use this experience as an opportunity to learn about yourself in a way you've never known yourself before. Learn about things that you're interested in or you've had interest in that can ultimately help you and shape you. Find ways to make yourself laugh. I know that sounds really easy to say, but is there anyone in your life or anything that can help yourself laugh? Because for me, laughter cures all.
I do absolutely love that. I was going to click in earlier and, like, heckle all these Canadians.
If Canadians make you laugh, I mean, I know a ton of great Canadian content that keeps you going for sure. But I would say the biggest thing is there's no right or wrong way to cope with something like this. Just simply give it a chance and go with it. I've always kind of dealt with the open way of looking at it as that's really funny. Looking at it as
we're getting a fair amount of background noise from.
Somebody sleeping and snoring?
Someone fell asleep.
Well, this part is
we're all very audibly sensible, right?
that might be the funniest thing that's ever happened to me speaking out of this.
If the noise continues, I may mute folks again, because that's the only way we're going to stop the background noise.
Well, I appreciate listening to these talks.
But for now, we'll continue in case people have those burning questions like this.
I would say just to finish, really live in the moment. I mean, something as funny as this. I think it's important to just kind of live in the moment.
Mark, what is your last name again? My mom is on the Facebook page. Obviously, getting on the computer doesn't do that much for me right now. But
For sure. And it didn't for me until I started learning a lot of the adaptive technology. That's really, really great and really easy once you get the hang of it. My last name is in the, if you ask your mom, it's on the Facebook, in the Facebook group promoting this call.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she has it written down. She just told me.
Yeah, for sure. And we can, we can definitely chat, and I'll give you some more ideas. And I hope I wasn't that boring, to be honest.
No, Mark, you've been invigorating. I don't think you take any reflection on you.
No, that's funny.
Well, I appreciate the phone calls, every month, and they're empowering and makes me not feel alone.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're calling, Adam.
Because it is really different, and you know it, so. Yeah. Well,
I almost
you.
Want to ask someone to be really loud right now just to see if...
Wake up!
Don't ask me to be loud. I'll be loud. I'll start yelling.
I can blame it on my dog, but she's not even snoring right now. So.
That's okay. Well, I mean, are there any more questions from people out there?
It's getting louder, though.
Are there questions from people who know they are not going to be able to unmute if I remute the call? I just want to make sure we get those questions in now.
Muted. I can unmute it. Mom's got the telephone.
Well, with that, I'll give it a few more seconds. I want to give everyone a chance because I know some people out there can't unmute.
Hold on.
I'm just trying not to laugh.
Somebody's having a nice time.
Yeah.
I kind of want to wait on the line as long as it takes till the person wakes up. We can find
out who it is.
Yeah.
I think they have to have dropped the phone, though. I don't know.
Hey, Pat from BC. That wouldn't happen to be my stepfather, is it?
No, he's innocent this time.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Too funny.
Until proven guilty.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We haven't heard him speak up yet, Pat.
That's because we don't allow him to in this family. The women do enough talking.
That's fair.
Whoa, you don't do that much talking, right?
There you go, well, Jessica.
I will. It is 9 o'clock on the dot, so I will take the opportunity. I'm not ending the call by any means, but because I want to be respectful of people's time, if you do have to leave now, I want to remind you that we host these calls once
like
a month.
Fire.
We host these once a month. The next call will actually stop. The next call is on March
1st. Laughter is good.
So this is easy. This is easy to remember. The next call is on March 1st at the exact same time as this one.
I think they have it perfectly set up into this.
Okay. So the next call is March 1st at 8 p.m. With that, I want to mute it again, but I'm afraid no one will unmute.
Laughter is the best medicine.
Dude, now goes now.
This is hilarious. Are you going to have a question? Otherwise, I'm going to go ahead and do this again. Yes, Maria.
Andy, you want to just, can we, Lissa or whoever can mention the conference?
Mm-hmm. Yes, however, I'm going to mute first and then ask that person to unmute. Then we'll
do
that.
Oh, yeah, no.
So
idea.
It's clear.
Good idea. Mute.
I don't know.
The conference has been muted.
All right. Lissa, if you'd like to unmute with Star 7 again. And give a plug to the conference. I just wanted to make sure that is included here as well.
Absolutely, Andy. Thanks for the opportunity. I think hopefully everyone on the call does know that we will be having our conference in the D.C. area, and it takes place on Friday, June 30th. And it's preceded by Day on the Hill, done in conjunction with the UMDF on Thursday, June 29th. So, and then that evening there's a social gathering. There's been links posted where, you know, the hotel is taking registration now. There's a conference rate on the hotel. So you can reserve your hotel now. And as you're making your plans, again, know that, you know, if you want to be there for Thursday's Day on the Hill, you can, the UMDF will schedule, buses from the hotel to the Capitol Hill. They'll set you up with meetings with your, representatives, and they'll do some advocacy training and, you know, sort of give you a series of asks and then take buses of people to Capitol Hill, and everyone sort of goes around and meets with their representatives. So, again, that's on Thursday, June 29th. And then the evening, late afternoon evening of June 29th is the casual meet and greet. Everyone gets to just hang out, get to know each other, kind of like this, but no snoring and just hanging out and chatting. And then Friday the 30th is an all-day, it's the all-day conference. And it'll be a good combination of, you know, content, people chatting, whatever. So that's a little bit on the conference.
Thanks so much, Lisa. And for those who want more information, can you give them a URL if they have the ability to go to?
Yeah. If someone has a question, if they want to message me off the Facebook group, that's at Lisa Pointino. That's one of the quick ways to do it. Another way is to email me, lhonpointine@aol.com. Another is you can go to the UMDF website, umdf.org, and then in there find support. There's a link to their national conference, and then within that you can go to the hotel and information from there. So it's a little complicated, but look, you can get there one way or the other.
And if you're not, I
send out emails every month about it with links to it. So again, if anyone's not on my email list, message me or email me at the information I just gave, please. And I'll get you on the list, and then you'll get the information.
Exactly. And if you write on the Facebook group, one of us will make sure you're directed the right way. And of course, you can email if that's easier for you.
Yep.
I do want to go ahead and add here. I know we may have more questions, and I encourage anyone who's interested in pressing *7 to unmute, unless you're snoring, don't do that. But for anyone who is listening, I want to appreciate and thank everyone who reached out to be a speaker this month. We had lots of people reach out who were interested in being speakers, and what I want to tell all of you is that we really appreciate it, and we have you on a list, and we're really excited to host you all sometime. But as always, we encourage, welcome, and are really excited for anyone who heard a story tonight or has ever heard a story and thinks that they'd like to share their story as well. And no matter where you are in the journey or how you are a part of this community, whether you are affected by LHON, know people who are affected by LHON, love people who are affected by LHON, all of you would make fantastic speakers because you all have something to share that someone would relate to. And I just want to echo that everyone has the ability to share and help others and relate to others. So I encourage you all to reach out. You can send us Facebook messages. My name's Andy Marks. Maria Johnson and Jessica Loomer are the other hosts. You can message any of the three of us, or you can email us at lhonlive@gmail.com, and we will make sure to get back to you quickly. If you have any questions about this call or even advice or things you want covered on the call, we've been doing this for close to 2.5 years now, and so if there are things you'd like us to cover that we haven't already, we're happy to kind of fit it in. With that, has anyone unmuted successfully and have any questions? Before I continue then, I will go ahead and unmute. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a question.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, great. You can hear me. This is Corey Lloyd.
Yeah, about there. How are you, Corey?
Pretty good. Hey, Mark.
Yep.
You can hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, got you.
Yes.
So my question was about, actually, when you spoke about your trip, it reminded me, like you said, Lissa, about how Jeremy had the bike ride over there in California. So my brother and I actually went over to California from New Jersey and rode down the coast, and it was a great, great experience in it. To echo what you were saying, you know, it taught me about myself and, you know, what limits I thought I had, which didn't exist at all. It all exists in your mind. But my question was about your college experience, and I was wondering, how was that for you losing sight, and did you have to learn the adaptive equipment while you were in school, and if you were able to finish, or what was your major?
I was studying it's a great question. First of all, I commend you for the bike ride, and as you said, it's amazing that you learned a lot about yourself, because that's the most important thing to learn, I've learned, is learning about yourself. And I went off to university and studied media and broadcasting and
okay.
broadcast journalism. And when it was kind of interesting. So a week before my senior year of high school is when I was affected. For about 6 to 8 months, I kind of, maybe even, you know, 9 months, 10 months, I can't really remember, but I lost all my central vision. Every day I would wake up and lose more and more vision. And I was always trying to do things scholastically and academically like the way I did before I lost my vision. When I went away to university, I went away 2 hours away from home literally a year later, which was a really big challenge for me, because I went from being the kid in school everyone knew with eyesight to the new kid in university that nobody knew who was now blind. And so the experience was really tough. I don't even know how I hung on, to be honest. As I was saying, that iPhone 1 had just come out. VoiceOver was not even around then. I had a couple students in some of my courses that would take notes for me, and then I would use Zoomtext at the time, which took forever to work on assignments. I felt the classes that I did best at were the ones that didn't involve me reading much, but they were the ones that I could use my, you know, oral communication and speaking a lot more. I took 3 years. I was in university, and then that's when I was inspired by Chris. I was in a really tough time in my life, and I think the hardest decision, but the best decision I ever made was, separate to making the phone calls for Blind Hockey, was to pack my bags up and put my university days behind me. I left university. I didn't finish my degree. I was too caught up in the challenges dealing with professors and accommodations and accessibility and everything. I felt like I wasn't contributing. I wasn't being active. I wasn't being utilized. I needed more than what was happening to me. And when I devoted the rest moving forward to the charity life and to nonprofit, it's funny, but the 3 years of what I learned listening in class in university, I applied every single thing. So just because I didn't get the degree didn't mean I didn't apply the knowledge I gained. But for me, that was my story. I went 3 years, and I haven't really thought about ever going back. I've been so focused on moving forward in my life in so many ways.
Oh, okay.
Is there anything specific you wanted to ask about university or post?
No, I just get curious at times about fellow college students' journeys. Like, I lost mine my senior year, so it started to deteriorate while I was in class. I realized that I couldn't see the exam as well, so I'd hold the paper a little closer to my face or sit closer to the front of the class. Or mine was in 2013 when I was diagnosed, so I had the iPhone 4, but I was able to at least pinch the screen and zoom in, or screenshot and zoom in on that.
But it's stressful, and I mean, I'm sure you can relate. I'm sure there's days, like I remember days of school going home from classes and lectures. I remember just breaking down. Like I spent too many times in tears, and it's such a short life, and it taught me that I needed a change. I needed a new chapter. I needed something new. I didn't want to feel that way anymore, because I needed to do something that made me happy. And I support education all the way, don't get me wrong. But I needed something that I needed a change in my own life that would motivate me with a new chapter and a new challenge. And for no matter who you are, whatever your disability is, whether you're blind, you're you're a paralegal, but no matter what, people with disabilities in general struggle in post-secondary education, and one of the biggest reasons is because of self-advocacy. And you spend a lot of time trying to advocate for yourself and your accommodations, and some professors understand, some professors don't. The system is not designed for students with disabilities. That's the reality of it. So you're constantly advocating, and when you're advocating, it's a very stressful thing to be doing, right?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. It got very, very exhausting. Like you said, walking around as a student who everyone knew, you know, with 20/20 vision, to walking around looking perfectly normal, but having to constantly explain that when someone walked up to you, you didn't know who they were, or, you know.
Yeah,
or...
yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
the story of my life now, actually, yeah.
you have to explain it all over again. So.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny because most people then kept deeming me as blind guy, blind guy, blind guy, or they kept giving me names. And it's funny, when I look back, they kept calling me blind, kept calling me blind, kept calling me blind. But when I speak to my friends now who I met at university about it, because I ask them, I go, why did you guys call me blind guy or blind face or all these names? And they say, because that's what we knew about you. But they had no idea to the severity of the vision loss, because they couldn't tell. So they were comfortable calling me that because they didn't think it was a big deal. But for me, it hurt a lot of times, right? Because I'm like, yeah, they just keep calling me a blind person, a blind person, a blind person. And it's funny enough, because I know all those sighted people who call me blind, I look back and I think of them like, you know, could they have strapped on a pair of rollerblades and gone 5,000 kilometers? I mean,
that's true.
I think about it, but the truth is, some of those people that call me blind guy blind are still some of my closest friends now, and they've had their own learning curve dealing with having a friend with a visual impairment, and that was really important. They got that opportunity.
Great. I hear you. I'll let someone else ask the question. I don't want to take too much time, but I appreciate
you. You can reach out anytime.
What are you doing over there watching? Yep. Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Corey.
Yep.
Other folks out there, in case you haven't unmuted, it's *7 to unmute. Maybe I'll give it a go again in a second to unmute everyone. Who knows? I will go ahead and take the opportunity, because I know there may be other questions out there, and stop the recording. But I want a huge thank you on the recording to Mark. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to my co-host, Maria and Jessica, and to Lissa and everyone else out there. Thank you for joining us. As I said, we do this every month, the first Wednesday of every month at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So next month, that's March 1st. If you're interested in the conference, it's the end of June. Day on the Hill is the 29th. Our conference day is the 30th. And as always, you can email us at lhonlive@gmail.com. With that, I will end the recording.